all of this began in 1995 at your home in Decatur County, Indiana. You were only 21 then. There was a fire at your home where you lost your 3-year-old son, Anthony. Give me a little bit of what happened next.
Well, I mean, at first I didn't realize that they were going to say it was an arson and that I was going to become the suspect. But about 2 hours after the fire was out, they were at the hospital telling me that it was an arson and they wanted a list of all my family and friends. So they essentially just isolated me from everyone. And in that time, I didn't realize that they were going to make a case against the only other person that was there.
Tell me, how did the people investigating pinpoint you as the person who caused all of this and not say that maybe this was an accident?
Well, in 1995, they were still going off of old forensics. So science investigation had grown, but it hadn't caught up to all the smaller counties. So at that time, they walked in and they saw what they termed a pour pattern, which was just a pattern on the floor that came in from the front door, and some other myths that have since been, you know, misconstrued, concrete spalling, blistering, those kind of things. And in their training, those were indicators of arson. So for them, they didn't look any further. They had the indicators and they decided it was an arson.
And during this time, you were also pregnant. You had just lost a baby. What was going through your mind?
I mean, I think you're just in shock. You don't realize what's happening until all of a sudden you're slammed in the face with it and you realize, oh my God, this just happened. This just happened because everything's been wiped out, tore away from you. And you're devastated in that moment. So there's no way to really focus on everything that's happening around you.
How are you putting the pieces back together now? You left prison and the child that you had while you were there is now an adult. How do you make up for the lost time?
You can't. There's absolutely no way. We did a lot of counseling together to try to work on a relationship because he felt like I wanted him to go back and be little again so that I could see it. And in a lot of ways, I did, but it comes to a place where you need to accept that you're never going to get that back. And I need to concentrate on what I have with him right now. And I'm glad that, you know, at 23, he calls me a friend and I get to meet his girlfriends and hear what's going on, and I can't ask for more.
Let's talk about the time that you spent in prison. You earned 2 degrees while you were waiting. Looking back, what encouraged you to pursue that or to have motivation to do anything?
There are a number of people in prison that are just sitting stagnant. And I didn't want to just do nothing and say, where did the time go? I wanted to make every moment count, even if I had to be there.
And so you're all about educating others and bringing your experiences to different groups of people. And in particular, one group is cops. What has been your experience? What are what is the purpose of your presentations? And what are the reactions when you do talk to people like law enforcement?
Ooh, well, my reaction at first was not very good. But it really led me into part of the presentation, which I think is impartial bias. And we're all humans, so we all have some kind of bias towards another person, or we look at a situation and we think, what would I do? And we expect the other person that's in that situation to have done what we would have done. So to recognize that as humans, we do this. If we are aware of it, then we can separate that and take a look at just this situation without bringing our personal thoughts and our personal beliefs and feelings into it. I think that would stop a lot of wrongful convictions before they ever go down that road. It's still not easy, but it's been very healing, which surprised me. I didn't think that I would look forward to going and talking to cops. But after meeting them, and so many of them come up to me afterwards and say, you know, I get it and I understand. And one young man walked up to me and said, for the rest of my life, I'm not going to forget a single thing about you. And that touched me more than any presentation I've ever done. And when I walked out, it was very emotional, but I felt better the next day. And so I hope to alleviate some of those lines between the wrongfully convicted and law enforcement, because we shouldn't come out and live in fear of these people, because it's not every cop that's bad. It's just a few, and some of them just make honest mistakes.
Speaking of healing and the process to accepting what happened, have you forgiven or moved past, you know, the people who worked on your case and made that mistake?
On a good day, I would say that there is some level of forgiveness there. Most days, I'm not there. I can't ever be there because someone falsified a report and stole those years from me, stole them from my family, stole them from my child. So for me, I know if I was in a job and I made a mistake, I would be held accountable for it. It makes no sense to me that we have law enforcement experts, we have blood spatter experts, fire science experts, all these people that are experts, and we don't hold them accountable when they make a mistake.
For Statewide, I'm Daisy Contreras. Today I'm joined by Christine Bunch, an Indiana woman who spent 17 years in prison for a crime she did not commit. In 2012, she was able to walk out of prison and have the murder charge dropped. Christine, when you talk to others that have been in your situation, what kind of support do you offer them? What do they offer you?
I mean, it's shared understanding that you won't get from anybody else in the world. Those are the people that know what it's like to watch all of your people grow and change on the outside, and you have a hard time keeping up with them. So everything that you lost, it's compounded and magnified because people have married and died and given birth and grown up, and you've lost out on all of that. And you can't really explain that to your family because it hurts them that you feel like you don't know them anymore, or you don't understand them, or you've grown apart. And with other exonerees, they get that on a different level. So you have that family bond because of the shared experiences.
Going back, did you ever expect a solution or resolution to your case? How did you find help, or did help find you? What was the story behind that?
Well, I did what every person in the prison does. I wrote letters every single week, and I wrote to the Innocence Projects, and some of them told me they didn't take cases like mine, and other ones told me they didn't have the time, the staff, or the funds right then. So I continued to write letters, just hoping that somebody was going to help. And I befriended a pregnant girl in there. I brought her out cookies, and she introduced me to her attorney. She was the first one that came on, and she was unique because I gave her my savings. And every month, I mean, I got paid $1 a day. I worked 3 jobs a day. Every month I sent her out $50 or $60, and she worked off of that. And so we started, and then other volunteers come on, and eventually the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University, which is part of the Innocence Network, came on and took over my case.
How long did that take, that fight?
It was 2002 before I got an attorney. It was 2006 before the Center on Wrongful Convictions came on. And it was until 2012 when I walked out.
What would you say is your message to people who are going through the same thing that you did, that maybe they still haven't seen a resolution, or, you know, maybe they feel like they won't see anything happen?
It's a roller coaster ride of emotions. But if you know in your heart that you were innocent, you never give up. You never stop fighting. I don't care if it takes your last breath, you keep pushing forward. And I know that it is very hard, but eventually something opens.
In the 20 years since all of this happened, do you believe that we're headed in the right direction? when it comes to investigating cases.
I do believe we're headed in the right direction. Of course, you know, this administration got rid of our Forensic Science Council, and I believe that was a mistake because we need to focus on forensics, especially when it comes to women's cases, because 9 times out of 10, they were a case like mine and no crime actually was committed. But those women are so vulnerable in that moment that they can paint a picture and get a jury to believe anything, whether it's true or not. So I think our emphasis really needs to be on forensics pushing forward. I think we need that commission back, and we need to strive to, rectify every mistake we possibly can, because we still have the death penalty. We're still killing innocent people. And in a country that's supposed to be the land of the free, we shouldn't have that.
Christine, thank you so much for sharing your story with me today.
Thank you. I'm honored.